Listen, honey, you played just as big a part in this thing as I did, and you are certainly not the only one hurting about it.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Melrose Plays. Today's episode is free because it is
Season 3.
Episode 6, No Strings Attached.
No, it isn't.
Now, here are your hosts, Tara Ariano and Sarah D. Bunting.
Hello, Sarah.
Hello, Tara and Dave. It's actually Season 3.
What did I say?
Season 2.
Season 1.
Oh.
Let's do the time warp again.
Let's not. Let's just proceed.
Okay.
Again with this, our next Patreon episode, number 28, is going to be dropping December 25th, a.k.a. Christmas. And it's going to be...
a.k.a. Christmas.
Well, it is.
Yeah, okay.
Some people don't TBA acknowledge Christmas, Dave.
We got an APB out for Christmas. APB out for Christmas. December 25th. Approach with caution.
Our topic.
Over and out.
10-4, good buddies.
Our topic for that episode is going to be, let's watch Jason Priestley in the Lifetime movie Dear Christmas. The subject for that is, he plays a firefighter. Melissa Joan Hart plays, wait for it, a podcaster. Yes,
what?
Really. I might make Dave watch this one with me so that he will have opinions about it.
10-4.
Fuck off. Anyway, it is on the My Lifetime app. It's on mylifetime.com for anyone with a cable provider login, which probably means it's also on the app, I assume. I haven't actually not checked. But you should also just hit up your digital guide and look around because they seem to be re-airing it a lot. So you may be able to catch it this week now that we have told you what it is. So that is that for Again With This, the next episode.
But we also got you something else very special for Christmas, namely our latest episode of Again With Them, a.k.a. Again With Them, dropping December 24th, a.k.a. Christmas Eve. We're taping it. You're welcome, Dave. We're taping it the week it drops, which means that if they drop an episode on December 28th, it won't be included in our second episode. But that just means the January edition of Again With Them will be supersized. God help us. Again With Them, just a reminder, is a perk for our Patreon supporters at the $5 level and up. So we hope that you will join us there.
We sure do. And there is patreon.com/againwiththis. Did you have anything else to add, face makey?
I'll just say I'm 10-7, which is out of service, apparently. I'm gone. 10-7.
Okay. Right. I thought it was about to be a 10-13, but okay.
No.
Deep breaths.
All right, let us proceed with this episode, starting with our D plot. Enter Dr. Peter Burns.
Ooh!
So you're a urologist?
Well, we'll get to that.
By the way, while we're on it, just very quickly, all right, so I had to see a urologist relatively recently here in Austin. Whatever. You know, it happens.
Sure.
There is. I'm
not because I kicked him in the balls.
I am not making this up. There is a doctor at my office. His name is Richard Chop. Let you think about that for a second. It is true. I'm not making this up.
Wow, Chop.
I'm going to look it up, and maybe at the end I'll say, but there is like... another doctor or two that have like suspicious penile names. We'll look forward to that towards the end of the show.
Okay. All right. Matt knocks on the door of the chief of staff to launch a personal complaint with Dr. Levin, but there's some blonde dreamboat in there instead, unpacking boxes, and he looks exactly like Frisco from General Hospital.
What Sarah, a coincidence.
I'm going to pause here so that you can share some feelings about this cast edition, because I know that you have them. Proceed.
Oh, my God. A forest of lady boners has sprung up in heart shape around me. Yeah. Frisco Jones was like absolutely my enduring jam. I'm sorry. Dr. Richard Chop has just appeared in a Skype window. Two P's.
The extra P is for extra chop.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so yes, Jack Wagner, very hot. This was in the days before you really necessarily knew about casting news in advance. So his appearance was a complete surprise to the rest of the Monday Melrose Club. And oh my God, we were so happy to see him. His hair is this 90s confection that you can see in the visual aids at, again, with this 90210.com. Excuse me, again, with this podcast.com. I still think he's pretty foxy. And he was in a Playgirl, and we will be talking about that in an again with this. Yeah.
Yeah. Famously a visual medium for discussing a Playgirl, but we're going to do it anyway. Yeah. He has floppy like Hugh Grant hair, but it's slicked back. But you can still tell it's like dying to be sprung from the gel he has imprisoned it in. Anyway, Blondie tells Matt he's in the right place. He is Peter Burns, the new chief of staff. And just with regard to the name, which Dave has already made his jokes about, as I was tweeting about Mallory's Place while I was prepping this episode, and I got a tweet from Kat Kinsman. Let me know, and we will talk more about this in future episodes, but in the 90s, she was part of an art collective called the Gala Committee, and that did a project called In the Name of a Place. And I'm just going to read directly from their website. It was a covert conceptual artwork that was deployed on the primetime television show Melrose Place from 1995 to 97. So they hadn't really started at this stage of the show. And they some of the work that they put up is still on like a really ancient website. You can still access. The pictures are so small. But one of the installations is in Peter's apartment. We will get to it when we get to that episode. But they do note in the description of his place that Peter Burns was like not an accident because he was kind of a slutty character. And, you know, Peter Burns, it's like, you know, that was intentional. So good nice. Call, Dave. Nice catch.
All right. I have the other ones already.
Oh, great.
So here are the ones that I noticed when I was at the office, just confirming with the website that they are real. Mm-hmm. We also have Robert Dickinson.
No, they yep. don't.
Oh, come on.
Oh, my God. Show me a picture. It's true.
And then scrolling down, there's two more. There's actually two more in this office.
No.
Jack Long.
Stop it.
Showing you again.
Oh my God, he's so old too.
And
wow. He looks like Len Carew.
And finally, we have Peter Ruff.
Oh no.
Oh no.
Peter Ruff could get it.
So, to summarize, at one office, we have Dr. Richard Chopp, Peter Ruff, Jack Long, and Robert Dickinson. I say I'm in good hands. Kind of.
As it were.
All right, back to the show.
10-7.
So
this has been Again with Piss.
Nice. Okay. Matt steps forward to introduce himself. And if he does so with a little more gusto than we've seen from him in the past, let's once again chalk this up to Doug Savant giving the scene more than is on the page. And who can blame him? Peter Burns. Not ugly.
No.
They shake. He offers to come back after Peter is more settled in, but Peter says it's fine. He's on payroll. He hates unpacking. And so Matt gets into it in clip two.
Dr. Kimberly Shaw was recently named the chair of the Social Service Review Committee. And how can I put this? She's a pretty brutal administrator.
Brutal? In what way?
Hustling uninsured patients through the hospital, sometimes to their detriment, looking only at the numbers, never at the circumstances. She just seems to have a lack of compassion. It's causing real hardship for some people.
It's very disturbing when doctors stop being doctors, isn't it?
Yes. I mean,
it's especially disturbing when writers of television shows skip over what seems like a whole episode in development of certain subplots.
Yeah. When did this occur?
Like, why did this occur?
Right. Like, it seems like this was, you know, to cause a more friction between the two of them as though more were needed. I mean, wig snatch. But, like, this is kind of a big story to completely happen off screen. But whatever. Peter, we'll see what he can do. So some number of days later, Kimberly in her weirdly unflattering double-breasted pantsuit and Michael and his gift of a potted plant all stop by to introduce themselves to Peter. They wanted to catch him up before lunch and tell him which cafeteria dishes to avoid and offer any help that he may need to smooth his transition. He thanks them noncommittally. Kimberly knows his reputation from his last hospital in Minneapolis, and Peter knows about her too, and she preens since she is used to chiefs of staff kissing her ass, which is why it's a shock when he then announces that he's taking her off the Social Services Review Committee. He needs someone with a bit more sensitivity. Michael leaps in to kiss ass, saying he's always thought this place could use restructuring. Dr. Levin always threatened to do it, but never followed through. And this turns out to be another whoopsie. Clip 3.
Actually, Stanley Levin is a friend of mine. We share some of the same opinions about hospital staffing, but I'm sure you'll find one difference. I don't play games, and I take no crap. Dr. Mancini.
You can hear the flat loathing in the clip.
You can. What you can't hear is Michael being like almost flirtatiously intrigued by this person who's like not about to get Mancini'd. It's amazing.
Yes. Yeah. It's completely the same dynamic as like when Matt was mean to Sydney and she was like, ooh, Michael and Peter. Moving on to our C plot. Amanda helps Allison with Elizabeth, driving Billy and Allison further apart. Allison calls out Elizabeth for doing Billy's work before she does Allison's, like, a day before. She does it in an extremely sarcastic tone, but the criticism is legit, particularly given that Elizabeth's response is just to shrug, claim she didn't see the files that Allison left her to copy, does not apologize, and does not take them to remedy the oversight immediately, and also does all this with a huge bitch face.
Mm-hmm.
So Allison reminds Elizabeth that she's supposed to be working for both of them, and Elizabeth is then a bitch about it out loud in clip 4.
Look, Allison, do you want to know what really happened?
Oh, yeah. I'd be fascinated.
Well, when I glanced at your oat basket, it looked empty. And because of the huge volume of work in Billy's box, I assumed you were putting your work in there as well. I'm sorry, my mistake. Now, if you'll excuse me.
Actually, Elizabeth, excuse me.
This is all very strange, especially since, like, Amanda pretended she was going to make Allison part of the hiring decision circa Chaz, which, you know, she didn't, but she said she was going to. And then now Elizabeth is actually her direct report, and she came from question mark. Like, she just appeared one day, and there was no talk of them, either of them, being involved in hiring her.
Yeah, I don't. And they keep almost making it out like this is a sort of string pulling maneuver by Amanda, but then it isn't.
Yeah, it's very dumb. Anyway. Yes, Dave.
I have an update. Dr. Chop retired at the end of November. He is no longer practicing.
You knew that. You got an email
about
it. But
when he did, it was vasectomies is what he did.
Allison storms into Amanda's office to complain that Elizabeth sucks at her job, which, from what we have seen, is fair and true. Amanda is surprised to hear this of Elizabeth since she's a new hire and seems eager to please, and Allison says she is eager to please Billy. Amanda hints that Allison's anger is actually about the end of Allison and Billy's relationship, which Allison denies. So Amanda agrees to talk to Elizabeth and promises it'll all be worked out to everyone's satisfaction, and Allison does not seem convinced, but she leaves. And the next thing we know, a tearful Elizabeth has her coat in her arms and is trudging up to Billy's desk to tell him that Amanda just fired her. And Allison eavesdrops as Elizabeth explains. Clip 5.
Are you serious? Why?
Well, apparently someone didn't like my work and went to management.
Wow. I don't know what to say. I'm sorry.
Thanks. Well, it was nice working with you anyway. I know we'll keep in touch. Bye, Billy.
Yeah, bye. I'll call you soon. Allison, you wouldn't happen to know anything about this, would you?
No, not really.
Let me rephrase the question. Did you go to management about Elizabeth?
Well, yeah, but not formally.
Then it's true. You are responsible for this.
No, I'm not. I lodged one small complaint with Amanda.
And coincidentally, Elizabeth got fired.
Yeah, but that was never my intention.
But that's what happened, isn't it? I mean, for God's sake, Allison, this is the real world. Someone just lost their job.
But not without reason. The fact is, Elizabeth wasn't doing her work, and that was affecting my work. This wasn't personal, Billy. It's just business.
It's unbelievable.
What is? That I went through the proper channels to report a problem?
No. That I never noticed how petty and vindictive you could be.
Fuck off. She sucked. Like, she wasn't doing her work. And Allison tried to manage her, and she refused to be managed. Like, Allison had no choice. What happened after that was up to Amanda. That's Amanda's problem or Amanda's issue.
And also, it's not petty or vindictive anyway. But if it were, we'd enjoy Allison a lot more. Because we're also petty and vindictive. True. So shut up, Billy.
Yeah. Also, are you guys going to continue to date? Or, we don't see her again, so no. But, that's also weird. You know, I know we'll keep in touch. No, you won't. out of sight, out of mind for this idiot.
Until they get email at home. Not happening.
Right. He has the brain of a goldfish as well as the lips of a goldfish. after bringing Joe up to speed on the Billy situation at work, Joe urges Allison to get on with her life like Billy did, like with the guy behind her who has been staring at Allison all night. And after they both make sustained eye contact with him, Joe then pops her eyes at Allison and is like, he's coming over. Like, ladies, you're in your late 20s and in a bar. Why are you surprised? How do you think this goes? Act like you've done this before.
Yeah,
ever?
I was just going to say, act like you've been here.
Seriously. But the issue, I guess, is more that Allison is out of practice, but it's too late to prep her because then this dude is there. And the actor's name is Joel Gretsch. He looked so familiar that I looked him up and have no idea where I know him from, even though he has worked a bunch. I guess Witches of East End. That's the only thing I think I've watched more than one episode of that he was in.
Yeah. My notes were like, he was in that? Like, yeah. I loved that show, but I think he's just one of those, hey, it's that guys that, hey, it's that, you know, one-off love interest, which, here he is.
Yeah. I mean, he has a real Keith look, so that might also be it.
He does have a Keith look.
So he also claims to be awkward at the bar thing, but says he saw her in there a few weeks ago and choked and promised himself he wouldn't if he saw her again. So his name is Mitch. Allison keeps it together, introducing herself and Joe, and he offers to buy them each another round. Class move, including Joe, even if she is a cheaper date because she's, just drinking club soda. So then Mitch walks Allison to her door and is like, aren't you going to ask me in? Which, pretty presumptuous, possibly a red flag. Wait to be asked if you are a man in this situation with a woman. I don't know. I thought that was weird.
Yeah. Ooh. Yeah.
But she does not seem nervous about that, but just says her place is a mess. He says he doesn't care. He's not ready to say goodbye and leans in to kiss her tonguefully and apparently well enough that she lets him come in just for a minute, she says. But once they're inside, things escalate. And the next morning, she wakes up as he's getting dressed. He says he has meetings, but he was going to call her later. So remember that. just make a note. He says he was going to call her later. He would like to see her again that night. He volunteers for dinner somewhere very special. But first, they can meet up for a drink at Shooter's somewhere very ordinary. I added that part. Before he leaves, he makes sure to come over and tell her she's real good at fucking, a compliment she reciprocates. I'm paraphrasing again. So then she gets to work late. When Billy notices and makes a snarky remark about her firing a crossing guard on her way in, she, not that obliquely, brags about her very satisfying life outside the office and then asks Amanda to cover a photo shoot that night, making sure to say it within earshot of Billy so that he knows it's that she's going out with someone who means a lot to her. And Amanda respects the horny hustle and uncharacteristically agrees. And at Shooter's that night, Allison's in a sexy, strappy black dress as she calls Mitch from the payphone and gets his machine. So this guy was planning to ghost her, but he gave her his real number. dude, come on.
Yeah.
This is not a smooth-talking gigolo move at all. Give her a fake. So she pitifully leaves a message saying it's Allison again, so that we know this is not the first time that she has tried him and that she is just refusing to take the hint. Apparently she's been there for half an hour. Guess she'll keep waiting. She goes back to the bar and checks with the bartender that there haven't been any calls for her. And he's like, sorry, miss. Like, she's in there all the time and they don't know her name. But she babbles all the rationalizations she's been telling herself about where he might be. And the bartender is nice enough not to reply that Mitch is definitely not coming. So then she tracks him down at his office the next day to go yell at him. Like, he told her where he actually works. Also, Mitch, why are you so bad at this?
Yeah.
So he tries to get her out of there. Obviously, she spent the whole drive over preparing for this conversation and is not going to be deterred from having it. So first he says he got caught up at the office and had to work overtime. She doesn't care if he worked all night. She will not be treated that way. So he admits, clip six.
I thought it would be easier for you this way. I mean, it was just fun, Allison. And it's not my fault if you can't handle fun.
I mean, come on, dude. Like, you did not give her the chance to handle fun. You were the one who suggested fucking dinner that night. Like, we know she can't handle fun, but maybe be more vague and she will pick up the one and done vibe if that's all it's going to be. Just saying.
Yeah, or maybe she won't. But why did you leave like a literal trail of actual breadcrumbs to your location and then leave a handy vase of water for her to dump on your head? Like, be better at this, bro. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. He is sitting next to a pitcher of water. So he gets the full Brandon in Keep It Together treatment.
Nice reference.
Thank you. So that's a wrap on Mitch, the worst fuck boy that ever there was. Hopefully he learned some lessons that he can bring forward into his next such encounter. Moving on to our B plot. Surprise, Chris is a creep. At a new fancy restaurant called Christoph's, which is so 90s, the exterior. Oh my God. See it in the visual aids. Jane and Chris are out for dinner, toasting to being on the upswing, even though they just failed in their scheme to win back Michael's half of the business in Sydney's divorce. So, okay, sure. Speaking of whom, Jane wishes her life did not suck so bad, meaning Sydney's. Chris says it must be hard on Jane to stand by and watch her sister struggle for sanity, which seems like an overstatement. Jane has no response to that, so Chris apologizes, and Jane explains that tomorrow is Sydney's birthday, and given recent events, she is not sure how to handle it. Chris suggests something simple, like going out dancing. So she asks him to come. And then he segues into another grandiose speech about what a life-changing relationship this is for him and blah, blah, blah. And again, we still do not know if these two have fucked, or actually we are about to find out that they definitely haven't, because right on time, Jane's like, let's go to your place. And he agrees. So there, they're getting down to it. Chris saying how beautiful she is and Jane making it weird by saying she's wanted to be with him for so long. And she adds that she doesn't hope it's hopes it's not too forward, but she has a condom in her purse. Just one, though. Okay. And so he freezes and she's like, what? And he's like, clip seven.
There's something I have to explain. I take you seriously, Jane. More seriously than I've taken any woman. Which is why I want to do this right. Not rush things.
I don't understand. I thought you wanted me to stay over.
I did. I still do. Don't you know how satisfying it would be for me just to feel your body next to mine, to just sleep beside you, hold you all night?
You just want to sleep with me? I'm sorry, I don't know what to say. This has never happened before.
Yeah, it's new for me too. But then, so is meeting a woman like you. Things that can be had too easily can't be valued. I want us to value each other. Always.
Ew.
To hear you say that means so much to me. Most men just want to jump in bed the first chance they get.
Jane, stay with me tonight. But let's not make love. Not yet.
Bro.
We'll be enjoying each other. Like, oh my God. Every red flag tied around his dick. Like,
yeah.
His motivations for this are either, like, graduate level psychological shit that I am not qualified to comment on, mm-hmm. or they're completely muddled by the writers who just need to justify various paychecks by having this gaslighting to extend on and on and on.
Well, they sort of spell it out in the next episode, like what his end game is, but it, like, with regard to her and Sydney, like that he wants to marry Jane and have Sydney on the side, like as his sex slave, basically. But it's like, you probably could marry Jane even if you fuck her. Like, she's very into you, despite all the signs that you are terrible.
Yeah.
But okay.
Yeah. Anyway. Also, it's Jane. She, you know, this is not a hard one to con.
Yeah. Just be the opposite of Michael. That's all she needs. Like, clearly.
Yeah.
But after Jane has fallen for this and fallen asleep next to him, Chris creeps out of bed and phones Sydney. Clip 8.
I know you're in bed, and I know you're alone.
What? Who is this?
I've been thinking about you, about what you might be wearing. If anything, tell me, are you decent under those sheets?
That was him trying to sound like American.
I know! It was like, Mr. Eastwood? Click.
Ooh. But also gross. When Chris and Jane stroll into the studio the next day, Jane actually looking good for once. She's in like a sleeveless blue top. I mean, I think it's crushed velvet, but apart from that, and like skinny black pants, it's, you know, it's an improvement over what she's been in most of the time this season.
Yeah.
Michael is already there reviewing their books. They tricked him once with the merger papers that she had him sign during his amnesia, but he's got all his faculties now and isn't going to fall for this latest move. Clip 9.
Creative non-interference. I've never seen it before.
I had my attorney draft it up, hoping Michael would have sense enough to sign it and allow us to bypass the extra step of getting his permission every time that we design a new line. I've got a meeting downtown. Unless you want me to stay a while.
It's all right. I can handle it.
Okay. See you tonight.
Hello. This is your wake-up call, Jane. Can't you see that Slick here was trying to pull a fast one?
Unlike you, Michael, Chris was trying to make my life a little bit easier.
Oh, wrong. Your so-called partner was distracting you. And once he gets you in bed, if he hasn't already, he knows you won't stay on top of things. He's manipulating you into trusting him.
I already trust him, Michael. A hell of a lot more than I trust you. Now, thank you for sharing your conspiracy theory with me, but I've got a business to run.
Jane, I know how you are when you're getting it regular. Nothing else matters.
You disgust me. Get out.
Fine. Just keep that libido of yours under control and out of the boardroom.
Oh, shit. He got your number, Dusty Pants.
Also, only Jane could make "you disgust me, get out" such a flat line. Like, yeah. Girl. Come on, Bissette. Like, get your back into it a little bit.
Well, yeah, true. But I also wonder if she was trying to make it sound like she's also a little bit horny for him still, kind of, which if that's the case, I can sort of see it.
Or she's just exhausted by him. Like, he disgusts me, get out, which, right. Fair.
Either one of those, yes.
Yeah.
So then we're at Dominique's. I knew that I'd seen this exterior before. This is, so I looked it up. It is the same club where we see Jesse working in the season 5 premiere of 90210. And when I looked this up to confirm it, I discovered they used the same sub music for that scene as in this scene, clip 10.
What?
Yeah.
Oh.
believe that was also
Deal by Aaron Spelling.
I believe that was in like many Peach Pit After Dark scenes as well. Like just sub dance music. Anyway, Sydney's standing on the side of the dance floor looking mopey. So Jane asks Chris to be a sweetheart and ask her to dance. Sydney reluctantly joins him just as the tempo changes, and she is weirdly undulating when he tells her that she's very good, and she rolls her eyes like a teenager before thanking him, which is the right reaction to this very weird compliment. And then he moves on to complimenting her dress, moving quickly from the acceptable range of expression to getting too specific about how it conforms to her body and then groping her ass, which is when she figures out he was her obscene caller, like she didn't know that before. So she storms off and finds Jane, but seems to realize it's not going to go well for her if she just tells Jane the truth. So instead, she just says she wants to go home. Jane doesn't get it, but agrees. And Sydney is sulking in front of the TV later that night when the phone rings again. Chris is creeping on the phone. She threatens to tell Jane if he doesn't stop calling, but he says he was just letting her know there's a gift for her in the top desk drawer. So she smacks the phone down, goes to the desk, and reluctantly pulls something flimsy, black, and lacy out of red box before dropping it and hugging herself and looking violated. And this is all very corny and soapy. I mean, you already said this, like when we saw him giving her the side eye while kissing Jane, like all of this was very predictable, but she's doing a really good job selling it.
Yeah, she is. And he is like sufficiently gross.
Yes.
Too.
Yes, he is. He is not playing it with any vanity. Like he's going for it.
Yeah, he is.
So the next morning, Jane is blahing about not having shown Sydney a good enough time the night before. But Sydney interrupts to say she needs to tell her something about Chris. Clip 11.
He came on to me.
Oh, Sydney.
Jane, please, you've got to believe me. He called here the night before last and was disgusting on the phone. Then at the club, he was rubbing himself on me.
First of all, Chris and I were together the night before last, so his calling would have been impossible. And I have eyes, Sydney. I was at the club too, remember?
But he did it when we were on the dance floor. Mm. And then he called here again last night around 2:00.
That's it. I've had enough.
Jane, I swear, it's all true.
No, the truth is, you've tried to break up every relationship I've ever had.
Wait, I've got proof. He left it for me in the drawer.
It's scary, Sydney. The length she'll go to. It is really scary.
This sucks because you kind of can't blame Jane for disbelieving Sydney because she does lie all the time.
Like, well, yeah. But it's like, oh, now you finally are skeptical of her? Come on. Come on.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, this has been fair. I still think it's taking too long, but this has been set up quite well.
Yes. So Jane goes to get her work bag, and which is when Chris calls to ask if Sydney is wearing his present. And Sydney sees an opportunity. Clip 12.
Yeah. And it feels so good. Sydney's doing it again.
But Chris hearing her say this.
Sydney. Sydney, can you please put Jane on the phone?
Hi, it's Jane.
What's going on there? I just asked for you and she went off about a garter belt or something.
I don't know. She's being very strange, but it's nothing I can talk about right now.
Sydney, put the receiver like down by your hip or something. Yeah. It was like an inch from her mouth while she was like, it's him right now. Of course he could hear that. God.
Yeah. Although here again, like this has been well set up. Like at least it's not one of those situations where like you're not supposed to think he heard when he could hear.
Yes.
He heard. So yes. It works.
Yes. Yes. But
well
it's also
done,
one of those
Melrose writers is the thing I'm saying. Cool.
Yes. But it's also one of those things where like on TV, you know, someone can't hear people like 3 feet away in the same room unless it's convenient for the plot. Like in the finale. Exactly. you know, when Hillary was inside and could hear a conversation from the patio, like, oh, this is the time? Oh, okay. Like,
yes. I mean, all that expert lip reading we assume all TV characters do. All right.
Yeah. So finally, Sydney's taking the garbage out that night when she is accosted by Chris, lurking in the shadows, waiting for her. Clip 13.
Leave me alone, please.
I can't do that, Sydney. See, there's something I wanted to tell you in person.
Don't let me go. I swear I'll scream.
Jane values my opinion tremendously. And I would hate to have to suggest that a padded cell was the best answer for you. After all, wouldn't it be a shame to end something with such an auspicious beginning? I'll be in touch.
With your word of the day calendar? Auspicious. Okay.
Yeah. Poor Sydney.
Salutations, creep.
Yeah. Sydney.
Yeah.
Her friend.
Yeah.
Maybe she'll get one in the next episode.
Hmm.
We end today with our A plot. Jake finds his biological father, who sucks. Jake and his new haircut, which you can see in the visual aids, are, guess where, clip 14.
You know I'm rolling every night and day. You can hear me coming from a mile away. Just like the
I'm pretty sure this was used parodically in a Progressive ad for insurance.
I think you're right.
And then I had Born to be Mild stuck in my head after prepping this episode. It's weird.
Yeah. When he stops for gas, the guy's like, you look like you've been driving all night. So I assume originally it was Radar Love, because that's an actual lyric from the song. But anyway.
Yeah, probably.
So, while the guy is filling his tank, Jake gets on the payphone to try Joe, but gets her machine. He doesn't leave a message, and poor pregnant Joe is too slow getting out of the shower to pick it up in time.
Aw.
She is in time to open the door to a furious Amanda, who demands information on Jake moving out, which is the first Joe is hearing about it. We also see Joe's robe in this scene, which I think has, like, small Inuit children on it. See it in the visual aids and tell me if I'm seeing it right. We don't, like, you can't quite make it out, but I'm pretty sure that's what it is. It's not as cute as Amanda's from the previous episode or a few episodes ago. So Joe is upset and reports on her last testy interaction with Jake, which ended in her have a nice life kiss off. But Amanda doesn't think it could be just the trauma from Jake's almost having been killed and the loss of his livelihood that drove him out of town, and implies that actually he probably felt pressured from someone, which Joe takes to mean herself. And Amanda's like, well, you were the last one to talk to him. But Joe says that Amanda played just as big a part in whatever this is as Joe did and is not the one feeling hurt about it. And Amanda hopes he isn't planning on waltzing back into the building when he returns, but Joe is confident that he will not be back at all. So by night, Jake pulls up to a large house with a 3-car garage and parks his motorcycle, like, directly at the front door, like a rude weirdo. A woman comes to the door when he knocks. Jake says he's looking for Mr. Connors. She asks whom she can say is calling, and as he is giving his name, Mr. C is stomping out from the back looking pissed. It's Raymond J. Barry, a.k.a. Raylan's shitty dad from Justified in a few years. And by the way, on that show, and admittedly, like, it's many years later, so possibly he shrunk, but on that show, he always looked kind of short to me, but here he looks real tall, so, like, Grant's show must be very short.
Well, and he manages to look tall despite wearing pleated Avenger khakis, which have been starched to within an inch of their lives, which are not, they're not great for the line, as they say.
No.
Yeah.
And also his hair is, like, kind of puffed up a little tall, too.
Yeah.
Helps. Anyway, he tells his wife he will handle it, and they both wait to make sure that she's out of earshot before Jake says, clip 15.
Vince Connors?
I didn't think I'd ever see you in person.
So you know who I am?
Yeah. Now what do you want?
To talk?
We don't have anything to talk about.
Hey, I'm sorry this is a little inconvenient for you, but I'm not just going to go away. I already did that once.
Ooh. So, Vince glares at him for a second before agreeing to meet him at a coffee shop the next day. So when that happens, we learn that Jake always knew who Vince was, thanks to some info supplied by his drunk mother. Jake has not told anyone else about his paternal line since the subject does not come up much. And Vince then tells his side of this very romantic story, clip 16.
Understand something. It was a one-night stand. I only spoke to her once afterwards to take care of things. I met her in some dive when I was out with my buddies. Guess I got a little too drunk, and she kind of was flirtatious, pretty. So it happened, but it didn't mean anything. Hell, I was married, had a kid.
Yeah, I heard the story.
You want to cut to the chase? Fine. How much do you want?
I don't want your money.
And why the hell are you here?
You don't get it, do you? I grew up missing something. I grew up knowing that my father was out there somewhere alive and well, but just out of reach. You don't get over that.
There's nothing I can do for you.
Even if it's just letting me know who you are, letting me know who my family is.
Impossible.
I've never bothered you before. Ever. All I'm asking for is a little of your time.
I guess that people in this situation have reasons, but it does seem weird that this guy, who it is later establishes already on his second marriage, wouldn't have, like, told his wife, I had a child with someone and I never knew him. Like, it's not, I don't know why this would be a giant shameful secret to this guy.
Yeah. And it's a shame that this particular plot is like, I think it's just like filler and not that interesting to me anyway.
No.
But it's like the actor's choices are really interesting. He delivers his lines like he's a cop being interviewed for Dateline.
Yep. He does.
Who is now in WITSEC. Like, it's really weird and like not appropriate, but also not uninteresting.
Mm-hmm.
But this plot line generally is like, I mean, I understand why it's being done, but I'm having trouble getting it up.
Yeah.
Just to return to our initial line of jokes.
Indeed. Yeah. I mean, this. I think Raymond J. Barry is, you know, he's a pro. He's for sure a hates that guy. And like, he's, as often happens on this show, bringing more to it than is probably there. And so I think he's imbuing Vince with like an attitude of like he's acting the way a guy who would do this would act, even if the dialogue isn't necessarily supporting it, I guess.
Right.
Anyway, good observation. Like, yes, he is talking like he's on Dateline. That's so true.
He's making some choices, and like I get it when you're like, oh, Melrose, well, I'm gonna make my own fun. Like, sure,
yeah,
okay,
for sure. So Vince's response to this is to sip his coffee and avoid eye contact. So Jake is like, fuck this, and starts to leave. And Vince is like, bye. but just wants to know why Jake came to meet him now. And Jake says he has lost a lot lately, so he thought he would try to find something for a change. And Vince invites him to the house that night for dinner. He'll introduce him as a friend's son, and Jake will leave after dinner. And instead of also saying, fuck that, Jake appears to agree. And so at dinner that night with Mrs. Connors and his much younger half-siblings, Jake sticks to the agreed-upon cover story. His dad was in the same frat as Vince. And his sister, who is totally a pre-Seventh Heaven baby, Beverly Mitchell. You can see in the visual aids.
Oh my god, I didn't even clock that. Nice.
That's her. She is impressed by Jake's motorcycle, and Jake offers to show it to the kids after dinner, but Vince says they have homework. Mrs. Connors asks about Jake's line of work. Jake parries to ask about Vince. He believes he's in electronics, but Mrs. Connor says he had a small electronics company with his first wife, but now he works at a software company in finance. When she hears that Jake is staying at a local motel, she invites him to stay with them, and since Vince can't overrule her without seeming weird, I guess, he doesn't. And apparently the kids finished their homework because then it's the next day and Jake is putting his helmet on his half-siblings while they sit on the bike in the driveway. And then Vince comes home and ends the fun, ordering the kids to go get ready for dinner and then asking why Jake is still hanging around. Jake says Mrs. Connors invited him to stay. Vince doesn't care if she asked him to move in. They had a deal. Jake pissily snips that he'll leave. Vince knew Jake would try and worm his way in. Jake says he's Vince's son, whether Vince likes it or not. Vince accuses him of trying to ruin things for his family for Jake's own selfish reasons after staying away for his whole life, basically. Jake was hoping to matter to Vince, that maybe he would give a damn, and then speeds off before Vince can try and get the last word. But then Vince gets into his car and chases after Jake on the highway. And by the way, as you know, we do these storylines in silos, but what happened between Jake leaving Vince's house in bright daylight and Vince catching up with him, also in bright daylight, was Allison getting stood up at Shooters, presumably at night. Like, what even with this editing on the episode? But anyway, Jake pulls off and Vince gets out to say he didn't want things left between them like that. And Jake is dubious in clip 17.
All right. You want me to say it? I'll say it. I have thought about you, Jake, a million times. I wouldn't be human if I didn't. Your mother sent this to me quite a while ago.
It's a picture of Jake in a football uniform.
Jake, I wish things were different, but they're not. And I can't give you the father you should have had. But I can give you this, and I do give a damn. I always have.
And so he goes in to hug Jake, and the hug is so awkward. I mean, speaking of choices, it's like an attack. He's like sort of braces himself, then he's like, it's like comes at him. That's a very strange way. You can see in the visual aids that because I made a GIF. It's really strange.
It's like if you're trying to have two like Tyrannosaurus Rex toys fight each other.
It is.
Oh.
But Jake allows it. And then after they unclench, Vince asks if Jake is headed home. Jake is not sure. Vince asks if there are people who care about him there. And Jake realizes that for all his drama queenery, there actually are. So he should go there then, Vince thinks, and let Vince know when he arrives. And we never saw Vince again. This motherfucker did 6 episodes of Push Nevada and 0 more episodes of Melrose Place. So, and,
yeah. And there's like this weird, like Ron Howard movie music happening also. It's it's a lot that it's like, and now Jake has a dad. Just trust us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And yeah. Triumphant return from space horns. It's talk about a choice. Oof.
So I assume the reason this happened was so that he could say he was married before I had a kid, so to establish that there's an older child that will eventually appear on the show, because I know that Jake has a half-brother that shows up later.
Right? Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think that's right.
Is that Dan Cortez?
I think so.
Okay, spoilers, I guess. So then we see Jo developing Prince when she hears a knock at the door, and she puts a hand on the small of her back and waddles to the door because she is pregnant to find Jake leaning in the doorway. Clip 18.
Jake, what the hell is your problem?
Come on in, did you say?
Sure,
I'd love to. You got any coffee?
Hey, you cannot just come in here after doing what you did and act like everything's fine.
All right. What do you want me to say?
I don't want you to say anything. I want you to shut up and listen. I'm mad at you. I am mad at you for making me worry. I'm mad at you for bailing.
I know. I don't blame you.
No. I trusted you. I trusted you to be here, and you just left without any warning. Damn you for not knowing how much you mean to me.
I'm sorry, but I'm here. For good.
You better be. He has really been trifling this season, especially considering that someone he supposedly cares about is like pregnant and alone. Like, I'm glad. I hope that this means all of this bullshit is over.
Well, yeah. Also, what is with the like, hey, like sort of teasing her for caring about him attitude? Like, fuck you. At least he drops it. But that's no.
I agree. Then he goes to see Amanda. She notes that he took an hour before coming to see her. Like, oh, were you watching? Way to play it cool. And asks why he left in the first place to back into moving in with Joe and getting back at Amanda. And he says that was not the idea. There was something he needed to figure out alone. Was it whether he gave a damn about anyone else but himself? She wonders. He knows he took off when she was in the middle of her own crisis, but he has shit to work out too, and he's sorry. She will just have to deal with it. She will, but he shouldn't assume she's going to give him his apartment back since he's a flight risk. He thinks that she's kidding and demands his keys back. Like, dude, you really cannot have it both ways.
No.
But, of course, when you look like that, you can. And she does give him back the keys, though she asks for a $500 security deposit this time. So then he goes home, plays his messages, including one from a guy at the marina. Sarah, I think you may have a guess as to his name. Play clip 19.
Mr. Hansen, this is Benson down at the marina.
A little joke
for once I get to be right.
A little joke for crossover listeners of the Extra Hot Great podcast, our sister podcast that is Sarah's go-to guest on Game Time when she is not sure. I enjoyed hearing that. Anyway, he owes slip fees on the pretty lady, even though it exploded. There's also a message from an FBI special agent. They're holding reward money for Jake on the Palmer/Brittany case, and apparently it's substantial. Dun, dun, dun. And that's it. Let us close up by naming our episode MVP.
Dr. Peter Burns.
That's a good choice.
He's the most valuable to me. And also Jack Wagner is just like loving it, loving every minute of it. And so am I.
He is. He's really having fun, even though like his so far, at least he's so underplaying it. Like he's so cold and flat. And I like he's really he's playing it very cool. I'm going to say Dave wants me to say Dr. Richard Chopp. I'm not. If he hadn't retired, maybe I would have.
Winner.
But he's a quitter. Where is Austin going to get their vasectomies now? I would like to know.
Babies all over the place.
That's right. I'm going to say Raymond J. Barry because he is by far and away the best actor in this episode. And for as dumb as the storyline was, he gave it more than it deserved.
Yeah, I'm comfortable with that. And I look forward to seeing him on Dateline again.
You watch him on the 6 episodes of Push Nevada if you can find them.
Oh, God. No one's going to do that.
No, they're not. Least valuable player. Elizabeth, goodbye. Your shitty assistant.
Mitch, dude, think it through.
Be a fuckboy or don't.
Not unrelated. Next time on Again With This, someone's in the kitchen with Billy, and the chef special is steamed Eeyore. Plus, Dr. Peter Burns is ensorcelled by Amanda, and we really wish Chris would step on the gas light in the Andrews subplot already. You'll want to step on us after you get a load of our visual aids, which you can find at our website, againwiththispodcast.com. That's also where you can find links to our very special 90210 book with excellent visual aids of its own by Julie Kane. So browse on over there today. You can also follow us on Twitter at @AWT90210 and join our Patreon page at patreon.com/againwiththis. Any level of support gets you extra content. I'm Creative Non-Interference Clause Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host, and this is a compliment, is the petty and vindictive Tara Ariano, and she is on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our producer is Benson down in the marina, David T. Cole. Talk to you next time.
Give me a slang name for policeman.
Dick.